Welcome into In-Game Chat for Saturday, September 21, 2024. It's Season 18, Episode 32. I'm Scott.
And I'm RJ.
Welcome into the show, everybody. I am just checking my mic levels with our TV sitting in a chair over there. So that's why you see me looking off into the distance, just watching the levels. Okay, I think we're good. Anyway, welcome into the show. It's something I really can't test. I can't test it until we're on the air, you know?
Yeah.
The studio is live. I say it's live, but I mean it's, you know, it's always on, always doing something the entire time. And in order to test that stuff, yeah, I have to be on the air.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'd rather I not be. Anyway, let's do this and quit talking about that. Ah. There you are. That clapping sound you heard. Smacking whatever it was, that was our clapboard, so I can adjust the audio. If you want to get in touch with us, well, by golly, join us on Discord and join into the conversation. Join us on Twitch and join in to the conversation as well. We are currently streaming right now live on Twitch. Go to twitch.tv and you can watch us. Join us in the chat room while we broadcast, and you can also go and join us on Discord as well if you want to do that. All the links that you need to get in touch with us and to find us are at our website, ingamechat.net. So welcome into the show. A quick little shout out to Dave, who is back home in Colorado, currently getting ready for work. He's got to go in for a shift, but he is listening right now. So, hey, Dave. How you doing? Hey, RJ. How you been?
What's up, man?
Yeah. Been a week.
Yes, it has.
Feels like longer to you, I'm sure, because of all the driving you had to do.
Yeah. But it was worth it.
Hey, real quick, because I'd forgotten the last... Well, I didn't... Yeah, no, I forgot. I ain't going to try and excuse it. Because your birthday was the Monday following... Not last week, but the week before.
Mm-hmm.
So happy birthday. Very belated.
Yeah, thank you.
I did give you a shot on Twitter for it, but totally missed it here. And I don't mean to do that. And I'm sorry, but happy belated birthday.
Not much obliged. I appreciate it.
Was that the trip you took? Was that a birthday trip? Sort of,
yeah.
Mixed in
after. It was afterwards.
Did you? And we're talking about stuff that we don't really talk about in the parking lot when we're done. Did you get any like giant food?
We didn't get to go. We did go to restaurants, but
Lulu's
Bakery.
She was
not
closed.
Speaking of bakeries, yeah, that bakery shut down. Thanks
yeah,
to, it was, thanks COVID.
Yeah, I know.
You know, we lost the giant cinnamon roll
that and took the giant plate. Was it Country Fried Steak or whatever it was? They made a big.
Well, it seems everything's giant.
It's huge. It was huge.
It was like somewhere along the lines of a Cheesecake Factory and the Marietta Diner. I mean, huge portions.
But it was
all
but
over
it,
the place.
Yeah. Well, the cinnamon roll was just ungodly.
It was a huge
in the size,
huge platter. I mean, I want to say that thing had a 12, 14 inch diameter.
It was big.
Yeah.
And the chicken fried steak or country fried steak, I can't remember what it is. Anyway, it has white gravy on it.
Either way, fried steak.
But it was massive as well. The entire plate was just this big thing.
Yeah.
Covered in gravy. Welcome to San Antonio. Did you try the pizza place?
Couldn't find a pizza place.
Because there's a pizza place that does really giant pizza there. We looked that up before you left.
Yeah, it was the place that took up the entire table. You have to give a 24-hour notice. What was it, 48?
I don't know. Probably a long time, though, for them to make it.
It was a long time order to make it, but you had to give at least a 24 to 48-hour notice before getting that thing, and that thing took up two tables.
Yeah.
That thing is huge. You can't eat that solo.
We're talking about San Antonio, which I don't get to go to anymore because PAX South, they stopped doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So no more trips to San Antonio, but no more PAX trips to San Antonio.
Yeah.
I still love going to San Antonio, though. Did you do the Riverwalk and all that stuff?
Yeah, Riverwalk, all that stuff. We went to a couple of restaurants here and there, and it was a good time all around, just spending time with family. The Airbnb had some questionable procedures done beforehand. I mean, I'll give you an example. All wash towels all over the place. I mean, bath towels all over the place. No washcloths.
Oh,
we had to go get our own because they told us what they would have it and they didn't when we got there. So it was just a mess trying to get stuff at the last second getting in there. But other than that, you know, little hiccups here and there. But the trip was fine. It was just the driving that was the most tiring part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, good to have you back, man. Did you get to game any while you were away, or
no gaming. Just spending time with family and going to places with them and making sure everybody got to where they needed to be.
Outside of your phone, do you have anything that's mobile gaming?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so.
Mm-mm. All my gaming is on a computer or my consoles.
Yeah.
I don't have any mobile things that I think about. Yeah.
What did you play in the time that you were able to?
Oh, I played the First Descendant. Playing with the Nexon Destiny-ish game.
I haven't tried it. Does that feel Destiny-ish?
It feels kind of Destiny-ish in terms of getting loot and gear and things like that and constantly having to swap out things here and there, trying to upgrade your equipment over and over and over again, building it up to the best as you can so you can take on those specialized missions where you take off bosses and things of that nature. I think some friends of mine, while I was away, was trying to take out one called the Devourer. And they couldn't, take it out because their gear wasn't upgraded enough. I mean, it's funny enough where you can have a character built up to level 40, which I have. I have Ajax, because that's the character I played in the beta when it came out. And I got him leveled up to level 40, which is the max you can get with that with the character. But your weapons and the gear that you equip can go well past that. Because the first mission I went to after getting 40, I was getting equipment level 44, level 45, things like that. So, okay, those weapons can go above 40, but your character doesn't, as far as I know, anyway. So, for the most part, I've been trying to build up more gear to better myself so I can go against the bosses in the specialized battles and doing the story mode throughout that game as well. Outside of that, a little bit more of MLB The Show. Still playing that here and there. But other than that, resting. resting after the road trip.
I can imagine.
More than that, man. Yeah.
I can absolutely imagine. Thar 6 says that if you've got a Netflix subscription, there's some pretty good games on that you can play through Netflix on a mobile device, be it a tablet or a phone.
Tablet, phone, something like that.
Yeah. So, I don't know. They have some good games.
I've been thinking about it. I really should get a tablet or something along those lines. I mean, it should be commonplace now, not too hard to get into.
My iPad's back here. Well, also, so is my deck.
Mm-hmm.
My Steam Deck. So First Descendant, what else?
First Descendant and MLB The Show.
That's it?
That's pretty much what I've been playing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, we covered this last week in the show, but I wanted to ask you if you read, I know I shared the news and stuff with you, I don't know if you looked through.
Okay.
Did you look through last week's or no?
I don't believe I did, but what was the topic you want to
talk
about?
The Bellatro thing.
Bellatro had there was an update or something.
Not an update, but there was something that was embedded in the game that only people had only just now discovered.
Okay. What's in there?
The Joker that does the random multiplier.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of whatever.
Yeah. Wild card.
Is that?
It's called Misprint.
Misprint. That's the one.
Yeah.
So there is a certain sequence that comes up when it's doing its little flashy whatever, you know.
Yeah, the description, yeah.
Well, the description where it's like throwing off, you know, plus three, plus four, zero, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
There's something that comes up that'll be like, it's like a hashtag, a symbol, and then it's usually a number or a letter followed by a letter.
Mm-hmm.
If you can see that, which, by the way, you don't have to have the Joker during your game to do it. You can back out, go to your collection to see the Jokers you've captured.
Yeah.
Or that you've used.
Yeah.
Look at that Joker, and it'll show up there, too.
Mm-hmm.
The number signifies, or the letter, because it can be a... It's telling you what the next card is that you're going to draw.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when you throw away a card,
mm-hmm.
the next card you get is it's telling you what you're going to get.
Oh.
Yes. So if it has a letter like a K, a Q, or a J, or an A,
mm-hmm.
and then another letter like diamonds, hearts, that'll be next to it. So you'll know if it's a KD, it's a King of Diamonds.
Yeah.
If it's a JH, Jack of Hearts. Mm-hmm. If it's a four... S, I guess, is a four spades.
Four spades and
yeah.
Six C, six of clubs, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You'll
yeah.
know. Yeah, you'll know. Okay. Just sit there and watch it, and when you see it, you'll know what you're going to get when you throw away a card.
Okay.
Yeah.
Little exploit. And it took this long to find it.
It took this long to find it. The creator acknowledged it and said that, yeah, that's something I put in, and I buried it under miles and miles of code.
Yeah.
And, you know, there
that's
it is.
Typically what happened. They bury something under code to help them along with something, and then they forget about it or just leave it in there for just to see how long it takes.
He knew it was in there. He put it in there. I guess he didn't really think about it after the success of the game. Probably didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And figured it was either already found or, you know, and people just kind of knew or whatever. But no, it was just discovered. So.
Yeah, just discovered, yeah.
Just letting you know about that. We talked about it last week, but I was wondering if you knew anything about it or had tried it. So next time you play, give it a shot.
Take a look at that, yeah. I mean, it's interesting how you see, we've seen news reports like this before where games 25 years, 30 years after release, someone just now found out something about it. The NES, the Master System or... Genesis games, things of that nature,
yeah.
or old PC titles, find something in there that no one discovered. It was sitting in there for 20 to 30 years. Yeah.
And I, last week, I was able to put a PlayStation 2 emulator on my Steam Deck.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. For one reason and one reason only.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for Burnout 3.
Mm.
And I now have it running on my Steam Deck.
Mm-hmm.
There it is right there. The whole thing. And here, where's the button? Yeah.
Yep.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
It is so good. Man.
You know, all the stuff you've got on there, you got me thinking about a Steam Deck or something like that. All the stuff you're able to put on there, emulation-wise.
Oh, God, it's so good. Yeah, I know. I've got a lot of emulation software on here.
Yeah.
Just not in the PS2 world.
Mm-hmm.
It goes Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Genesis.
Yeah.
I think I got some N64 on here, maybe, but that's about it.
Yeah.
I didn't move into PlayStation. I didn't move into PlayStation 2, although this is the doorway into PlayStation 2. But honestly, just so I could have Burnout 3 on my deck.
Yeah.
And Burnout Revenge, I can load up on here as well. I got to work with the controls. They're really awful. They're not what I remember when playing the game.
Yeah, I remember because I think I've emulated before OutRunners. Any driving title that involves, you know... pressure sensitive, like hitting the gas, hitting the brake, things like that.
Yeah,
there's always some type of calibration, special calibration you got to put in there to make sure that everything works right. Especially if you're working with a third party controller, you know, because trying to play that a pressure sensitive game on a just standard D-pad, not very easy to do.
Yeah, there's a way to go in here and mess around with the controls on this, But yeah, so anyway, I played that a little bit here, and also I ran it on my PC. I was so excited the fact that I got it to run on the Steam Deck that I said, you know what, let's make this happen on the PC. You've already done the work. You've already done the heavy lifting of getting everything that you need. Now just make it run on your PC. So I did. I went and I found some forums about how to make it look really good because there's mods that you can add to it that help with widescreen support, 14:4, the resolution upscale, all this other. God, it's so good looking. on my 27-inch PC monitor. I can do the same with Burnout Revenge, although I'm playing on the PS2 version. And when I did my research, I realized that Burnout Revenge is on backwards compatible on my Xbox Series X from the 360 version.
Mm-hmm.
And since I already had that, I was like, you know what, let me go back and play that. Man, the bug bit me again. To go through it.
How long you ended up playing it?
Oh, I mean, I've been playing it like for at least an hour every night since I started. It was like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah. I think Thursday I skipped and I didn't play it last night either, but I've been playing it every hour going through Burnout Revenge. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, I remember being a defender of Burnout Paradise. Because for me, Criterion could do no wrong. And honestly, they still can't. But, well, I say that. Not where Burnout's concerned, they really can't. But I don't know about Need for Speed. But playing Burnout 3, playing Burnout Revenge, Paradise was in some ways a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
The open-worldness of it was like, no, you can give us that, sure. Let us just enjoy the open world. But when you give us tracks and races and everything else, you should do it exactly like you did it in the previous ones. It is so much more fun to just drive and have an idea of where you're going rather than drive and just wonder when your next turn is coming.
Yeah.
Everything that they did. I defended it, but I can remember defending it.
Yeah.
Way back when. And I don't remember what my defense of it was. In other words, I don't remember what my...
The newness of it, the uniqueness of it.
Maybe just the evolution of it, I suppose.
Yeah, I get that. But then throughout the history of driving games, it's always been like drive, focus on the track, get there your biggest time, and then pick your next course, and we will take you there. But the open world aspect, it really did stand out having to drive to your next location, have to check the map. Is just something I wasn't expecting in a driving game where I strictly wanted to get from point A to point B as quick as I could.
Yeah, see, I loaded up after some time with Burnout Revenge over a couple of days there. I loaded up Paradise just because I was, you know, just going to jump in there and play it. And when I got in there, the open road was okay. But I wasn't enjoying myself just driving around hitting jumps and trying not to wreck or whatever. I needed engagement. I can get engagement. Yeah. You just have to drive to one of the intersections and then, you know, you start whatever that thing is.
Yeah, I was about to ask, on the way to the next race or event, there's, if I'm remembering right, there's nothing else on the road with you except...
Other traffic, yeah.
Other traffic?
I mean, there's other traffic, and every now and again, when you unlock a car, the car doesn't get delivered to your garage. It gets put into the world, and you have to take it down. You know what I'm saying? You have to chase it down, make it wreck, and then you get the car.
Okay.
So every now and again, in between races, and you're driving to your next event, you know, that little thing will come speeding by, and then you go and chase it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to. You don't have to. But, I mean, there's that, but it's mostly just you and other pedestrian cars on the road. There's nothing else until you get to your, you know, there's some jumps you may want to do, or maybe there's some stunts to do, but none of it matters until you initiate an event.
Mm-hmm.
And going back through these other two games and kind of jumping into Paradise, if you had just given me an option, let me free roam. I'll do that. Otherwise, let me pick what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go through and pick it. And then when I pick it, make sure that whatever the track is that you've cordoned it off, you know, and move, you know, whatever. The guidelines of where you're going and not trying to memorize the map, although I have. And playing some of these maps on Revenge and 3, these things will hit me again. Like, I know something's coming up here. I remember this. The burning laps they're throwing in there, the ones where you have your time attack and everything. God, I hated those. But boy, my whole philosophy of playing those games back when I played them, back when they released, as I was playing them new, of you get gold or you go home type of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you don't finish. If it is second or it is not perfect with a win, you restart.
Start over. Yep.
And that is exactly what I do.
I know
and it's
feeling.
Fun. It's perfectly yeah. fine. It's not a thing where I feel burdened by that. But that whole thing just overtook me again, took me right back to what it used to be for me,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, you nail this thing and then you move on. You do not move on until you have nailed this.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how I take it. And yeah, I've just been loving it. Crash mode. I played a little bit of that Showtime mode in Paradise, and I was just like, man, it's cool, but man, crash mode is just great. It was mm-hmm. just really, really good. Figuring out the crash breakers, which they took out. I wish they still had them. Ah, God, we need... I don't even want a new Burnout at this point. Remaster 3. Give me remaster Burnout 3 Takedown, remaster Revenge, remaster a Burnout group if you want to. They've already remastered Paradise. I wish they would go back further and remaster the other ones. Bring back the online lobbies that you can play with in Revenge and in Burnout 3 Takedown. Whichever one they want to do. I'm actually cool with either one they want to do. Although traffic checking is wonderful. Playing a little bit of 3 today after playing so much of Revenge, it was... Yeah, I had to retrain my brain of like, you can't just hit cars, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could in Revenge where you just slam into the back of them and just knock them out of the way. It's like you can't hit anything but other racers. So, you know, bob and weave, man. So it's been a great nostalgia trip.
Yeah.
To get back into these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really looking forward to just kind of, you know, enjoying that. I really, really do. And it really makes me long for a remaster of 3 or 4,
mm-hmm.
either Takedown or Revenge. I'll take either one. I think Takedown is the more beloved of the series through most people and would probably do that. But given the size of both, I think at this point you could probably do a double feature on that. Just a, you know, Burnout remaster of whatever, Takedown and Revenge would be nice. Licensing music, I don't care. I know there's some iconic stuff on there because I say iconic, not because the songs are iconic. It's iconic because it's what you heard every time you turned on the game. It's what you heard as you're waiting in the menu or playing the game or something like that. I never bothered with those. There was a really cool thing you could do on your Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
You could rip music to your Xbox 360 hard drive. Way back when, the Xbox 360 came with a 20-gig hard drive. And almost immediately for me, I was ripping tracks to my hard drive. Because you could substitute the music in your game. Some games allowed this. Most games did.
Mm-hmm.
You could substitute the music in your game for the music that was on your hard drive. Because if I remember right, you could also rip that stuff into your original OG Xbox, I believe. You could rip music onto the hard drive there. Anyway, you could rip music. And so I made a playlist. And the cool thing about Takedown and Revenge, specifically I think Revenge, was that the music worked with the game. In other words, when you wrecked,
yep.
the music would, because you would wreck in slow motion.
Fade, slow down.
So the music would completely go away, and it got into this slow motion, very quietness, and you're hearing the crunch of the cars and things like that. As you're driving along, the music's whatever steady. As soon as you boost, the screen stretches out a little bit to give you that sense of speed,
mm-hmm.
and then the music rises.
Mm-hmm.
The music comes up, and all I did was put chase music in there. I didn't bother with like licensed songs. Well, these are licensed, but still, I didn't bother with like, you know, whatever, all the different bands.
Yeah.
I went to my film composers,
mm-hmm.
and I looked for my chase music. I went to the downtown San Francisco chase in The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
I went to, oh God, what was, there was a couple of others that I really, really, there was a chase, mostly, this is Michael Bay films. There was a chase that came up in The Island way long time ago. Mm-hmm. Had some really good chase music in there. Pirates of the Caribbean has some fantastic, like, energizing chase music, mm-hmm. you know? So I did this whole playlist that I did for that. And not that I'm looking to do that again, but this is how I enjoyed my burnout stuff. And it was just wonderful. So it's been a real good nostalgia trip. And I'll look to do some more, because when I was looking for Burnout 3 Takedown to put on to there, so many PS2 games for me to kind of, dip my toe into.
You got that title overload that I used to have when I bought a PlayStation years back. Suddenly, the library of games available to me just exploded.
Yeah, and I don't want everything. I just want my favorites from back in the day and stuff. So, but yeah, it was just great to kind of go back to that and to enjoy it as well. It was just wonderful. The only other thing that I played, Marvel Snap, of course. I'm in our group with the Colony of Gamers guys and playing my Snap stuff. I've gotten into I'm collecting a lot of the cards that have classic comic book covers on them.
Okay.
They've started doing that in Marvel Snap. Mm-hmm. So there's a great variant of a Spider-Man card that is the...
like Amazing Fantasy 15 or something like that?
Well, no, it's Secret Wars number 8.
Okay.
Which is the introduction of the symbiote suit, the black Spider-Man suit. I have that issue at the house, but now I also have a version of that issue on my... On my Snap game here, and I just I was like, that's fantastic. That's wonderful. So yeah, God, I've really been enjoying that. And what else did I play? I did some pinball stuff. There was a tournament going on. I played some of that, but I was just like, oh God, the Williams tables. I got a taste of the Williams tables that Zen Studios has done for the Pinball Effects series. Circus Voltaire, I think is what it was, and Theater of Magic, which used to be back in the Aladdin's. That table actually sat in Aladdin's castle here in town. I can remember playing that.
Yeah,
those two, Mars Attacks. They were just really, really. I really enjoyed those very, very much. And Frostpunk 2. I played a very tiny bit of that this morning, not exactly sure what I was doing because I was kind of speeding through it, thinking that I will get out of the tutorial here in a second and it'll open up and I'll know what I'm doing. Absolutely not. I bulldozed my way through that and died fast. Yeah, my whole colony dead. Completely dead. So that's going to take some more, that's going to take some time for me. I had bought the first one on a sale probably a few weeks back. I think it was down to $2. Oh. Because it was promoting the other game coming out. Yeah, and I thought, I've never played this, but it looks kind of good. It looks, city builder-esque, resource builder type thing. And I thought, sure, why not? Get it. $2. We'll play that. And if we like it, then, maybe we'll see about getting the Frostpunk 2. Mm-hmm. Well, I got it anyway. They sent me a code for it. And so... again, I played one mission of that. I want to put more time into that because obviously I did something wrong, and I gotta figure out what I'm doing and how it works and just to go through it. So, but yeah, that's the plan on that. I think I got some. Oh, there was a sale on some Sony games, so I picked up Horizon Zero Dawn on PC.
Okay,
which apparently is about to get a remaster. From what we've been looking at in our stuff here, it got rated for PS5 and PC, a remastered Horizon Zero Dawn. Honestly, it's not a game you would think would need a remaster whatsoever.
Yeah, I was about to ask, isn't it too soon for a remaster?
It got a nice upgrade whenever it hit PS5 and PC, by the way. It got a nice little bump with what you could do with it. So I'm not exactly sure what the remaster is going to do. Hopefully, if you own the first one, a remaster is only, $10 extra, I guess, or something like that.
Let's see. That's the case. Late February of 2017 is when that game released, so.
Right.
It's not that big of a touch-up graphically, I would think.
Well, I mean, if you look at what they've done with Last of Us, Like, they did Last of Us 1, and they did a remaster. That was PS3. Mm-hmm. They did a remaster on the PS4.
Yeah.
Then they did Last of Us 2. Then when the PS5 came out, they did a remake or remaster for Last of Us 1 to run on PS5 and PC. And then they did one with Part 2 for PS5 and PC. They're not so much a remaster as it is more of a touch-up, I suppose.
Touch-up, yes. Yeah, that's what I mean, touch-up. A slight graphical improvement.
Maybe, really? Yeah. I don't really know. I could see that with Last of Us 1.
Mm-hmm.
I could see there being some significant improvements in that. Because you got to go back to PS3 days for the original on that. And probably the last time I played it, I don't remember playing the remaster. Of the game whenever it came out, and it came with Left Behind, I think is what it was, or Late Last Days or something, what it was called, the DLC that came with it. I remember playing that, but I don't think I ever touched on the remaster at all. Thar6 says he want to remaster Days Gone as well. I thought I picked that up, but I didn't. It was like $10, but I didn't pick that up on PC. I did get Ghost of Tsushima though.
Okay.
Finally. Yeah. And that's on PC. As well. Haven't done anything with it, obviously, but now I have it. So, yeah, I'm going to put in some more time with Frostpunk 2 tomorrow, see if I can figure that game out. I'll put in some more time with Snap, probably stream some of that. Maybe. We'll see. Lately, I've been streaming Snap on Sundays just to knock out some more bounties and do a couple of other things. But so, yeah. Yeah, we should take a break here because, it's about that time to do so. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll dive into the news that we've got here. And, we got music here from, it's our classic week. So we go back and we find tracks from older video game titles. This comes from the Nintendo Entertainment System. It is the theme for a game called Lunar Pool. I think the week before you, when you were here, I had the Side Pocket or something like that. I can't remember. Side Pocket 2 or whatever. So this is Lunar Pool. We'll be back with more of In-Game Chat right after this. Back into In-Game Chat. This is music from Rad Racer 2, which I had forgotten they made a sequel of. I played Rad Racer a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the, probably the first racing game I bought on this is the first race, that might be the first racing game I ever played, now that I think about it.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, it was a Nintendo machine. I mean, outside of going to the arcade and maybe playing a at that time, though, Rad Racer may be the first racing game I ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
87.
See, I'm trying to think. Can you? There's a game that was in arcades called Stunt Driving, I think.
Race Driving. The polygonal.
Yeah, and you went through a loop and all this other stuff.
Yeah, the one that I never got through.
I never could.
I could never.
You said it was race driving or stunt driving?
Stunt driving, race driving, one of those things.
I know there was also Rush, which but that was after
San Francisco Rush.
Yeah, yeah, that was after that.
Now watching people try to navigate the train in San Francisco Rush 2049. That was fun.
I loved me some San Francisco Rush 2049. I tried to emulate that feeling at home whenever they had a home release for it or whatever, and it was nothing. You needed the chair, you needed the wheel, you needed everything that it offered in that arcade to get that experience that you had. You also needed the investment of ever how many quarters it took to play it to be like, okay, put my money in this thing. Let's go as far as we can with it. So, yeah.
What was it, Atari did that?
That may have been.
Race driving?
Yeah.
Yeah, race driving.
What year was that?
90? I think.
It had to have been Rad Racer then.
Yeah. Let's see. Race driving. 1990. Atari.
Yeah. It had to have been.
And everything. The flaws that got me all the time was that, of course, the loop. I remember one time I couldn't see where I was going, and I ended up launching myself from the top of the loop out into out into nothingness. And
you had to hold on. Yeah, you had to maintain your driving in that. It wasn't some sort of like automatic thing, but yeah.
Yeah. Or the standard jumps. If you took it too fast, you went too high, and as soon as your car landed, if it was four wheels or not, you were crashing the vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So had to be real precise in that thing.
You did, but I still played it every time. Of course, I died on the loop every single time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Rad Racer's the first racing game I ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Has to be the first racing game I ever played. Can't tell you what the second one would have been, but that had to have been the first. So,
I think it may have been Pole Position on the for me.
It's possible. I forgot about Pole Position. You may be right on that. You may be right on that. I don't know. I'm not sure what else would have been in the arcades at that time that would have been a racer.
Hang On.
Possibly. I don't know that I played it.
The motorcycle one.
Oh, no. Sorry. Okay. Never played that.
That was Hang On.
I was big into that one. I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I never played it, but I also just wasn't down to play. I don't know. It didn't.
Didn't pull you in.
No.
Yeah.
Just watching people play it really didn't pull me in. It just did not. For whatever reason, because it was, motorbike. It was those super bike racers, and that just, I don't know, just it didn't pull me in.
Mm.
It did not pull me in. Rad Racer didn't pull me in too much either. I was horrible at it. Mm. I should tell you, I was bad. I was Top Gun level 2 landing on the aircraft carrier bad at it. Like, this is as far as I go with this game.
Yeah.
I only get past, if I get lucky enough to get past level 1, I'll die at the mid-fueling, the mid-air refueling in level 2 of Top Gun. Never saw a level 3 until I had a game genie and could get through it.
To force the issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And so same point applies with Rad Racer. I was not good at that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really wasn't. And AC Wraith says that the 3D mode never worked for his eyes. I don't remember the 3D mode working for my eyes either. I don't remember. I remember seeing what it did to the screen where it did that red-blue double vision thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I had put on the glasses and I never got the effect.
Yeah.
So, but, you know.
I'm looking at images of the game and I see a night course. And, wow. But yeah, you got very little to go on in terms of guiding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yep. All right. Let's jump into the news here and see what we got. We had almost the entire show last week was spent talking about the PlayStation 5 Pro, which they had announced.
Yeah.
$700 machine that comes with no disc drive.
Yeah, not received well.
I mean, there's going to be people that are going to buy it, and that's fine. I don't begrudge anybody for buying it at all. That's fine. I wish they'd give you options. Like, even bundle it with a disk drive if you want to. Like, you don't have to make one that comes with a disk drive, but bundle it with one that comes with the external disk drive that you have And I mean, and factor that into your price as you're selling it as that bundle, sure. But they're not even giving you that option. They're just like, here it is. If you want that other one, go find it somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want that disk drive to go with this, then you need to go out there and find it. Meanwhile, everybody's been grabbing them up to sell either secondhand or hold on to so they can use it for their mm-hmm. PlayStation 5 Pro. So, no, it's not for me. I feel like it's hard to tell who they're marketing that to. Are you marketing it to regular or to already owners of PlayStation 5 to trade in their machine to buy this one or sell their other one to buy this one? Are you marketing it to people who don't have a PlayStation 5 yet?
Well, I don't have a PlayStation 5, and I'm thinking the original PlayStation 5 is what I would go through.
Would be exactly, yeah, given the price thing. And the fact that you're probably going to find those even cheaper now.
Yeah.
Especially secondhand or whatever the case may be, you'll probably find those even cheaper.
Essentially, what's the real performance difference between the Pro and the original PS5, really?
I mean, we went over all this last week. There are some differences. I think you're getting, oh, man, was it extra 45% of something? Man, going through it, I don't remember. But
it's not worthy of remembering or just not something that...
Well, there was a lot of numbers that goes with it, and I had info in front of my face when I was reading through it last week. Obviously, I didn't retain that info. There was a lot, but I didn't really retain it only for the fact that I'm not picking this up.
I mean, it's the same thing that the thing you think about with the PS4 to the PS4 Pro. Is the upgrade worth the cost of admission, really?
True, yeah.
I mean, is it worth it? And
right.
PS5's looking like it's the same thing, to me anyway. Not worth the upgrade. Yeah. Just get up, just stick with what you got.
What it did do, and Lethal Migraine's talking about this, there's no reason to buy one or pay that much money for a console. What it did do, you're putting a $700 price tag on a mid-generation refresh.
Mm.
What does that mean for your next-generation console, price-wise?
Higher.
Right?
Yeah. I'm expecting it to be higher.
I know. That's the scary part. You know, that's the scary part, that it's that if it's $700 for a mid-gen refresh, not even the next generation console, not even a PS6, what is that thing going to cost? What is the next Xbox going to cost? I really feel like there is a point for a price war. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I really feel like...
I was going to make people buy and build PC parts.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that.
I mean, you don't have to... All you got to do is be less than the competitor. And I would say it would need to be... I'm not sure what the significant amount is, but I should say it should be a significant amount. It shouldn't be something where... For 50 more bucks, I can get the PlayStation 6 over the Xbox whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well then fine. I'll shell out I'm already spending this much. Might as well throw in another 50 to get that one.
Yeah.
If that's exactly what you want. But if you cut it significantly, you know, if theirs is $800 and you sell yours for $650, that's significant. That's a significant amount. I would say even maybe $100 would be significant, although if you're going $800... If you're going 700, throwing in another 100 is, you know, seems like a small thing to do to get that one. Now, I also understand that it has to do with performance, and we'll get all that stuff whenever it comes out to know that, okay, here's what you're getting with this. Because if there is a significant difference, and most likely there won't be, because there usually never is, the difference always comes down to the libraries. More than it does.
You can have the most powerful system, most pretty system in the world. If you ain't got the library to back it up, it's a big paperweight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's nothing you can do with a machine that is all kinds of powerful unless you got stuff to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be stuff that you want to do with it, you know?
Yeah.
And Sony's biggest problems right now is their first-party titles. Their first-party library is lacking. I mean, Concord came out and they just closed that. You know, they just killed that one off.
Yeah.
So it's their libraries are lacking at the moment. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing that they have, and we talked about this, the reason why they're doing this mid-gen refresh is GTA 6 next year. They can tout, look, you get it on the PS5 Pro, you're playing the game better than any other system, you know. You're playing it better than whatever. You know what I'm saying? They can push that as like, we're the most powerful console on the market. This is the better way to play GTA 6. Come to our side, buy our $700 machine. Mm-hmm. If you want to do it that way. And we'll see if that's going to play. We'll see. Yeah, I know. Thar6 says the difference they are showing so far for the PS5 Pro is not worth $700.
So it's a PS4. It's like the PS4 all over again for right now.
Well, the PS4 and the PS4 Pro.
From what I get,
the
I
Pro
at.
Wasn't bad. I was watching. I watched a video about this sort of jump from 5 to 5 Pro, 4 to 4 Pro, and mm-hmm. the differences that you were getting. The 4 Pro really added some differences, especially with the SSD that you had inside of it and everything. I think it had an SSD, whereas the other one did not. Had a regular platter drive on the PS4, but you could mm-hmm. put an SSD into your 4 Pro.
Okay.
And there were some other graphical upgrades that were significant. And the price was $450, I think, or was it $600? I can't remember. I don't think it was $600. I remember getting it for like $150, I think, when I traded in my PlayStation 4. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember. And I know you're Googling that right now.
$400?
The PS4 Pro?
PS4 Pro release price.
Was $400?
$400.
Okay. It's a little surprising, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, wait, what? What was the PS4 release price?
Let's see. $400.
The PS4 release price was $400?
Yeah.
And the Pro was $400?
Yeah, but how many years between?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Again, you've got it there with what you're looking at.
2013?
For the
PS4. I'm just...
Yeah, so what, 2016?
Yeah, maybe a few years down the line. Let's see.
For the Pro?
2016.
2016, yeah.
Yeah, 3 years later, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, for $400, $400 back then, and then 3 years later, $400 with a PS4. 3 years later.
Yeah, well, no wonder then. Yeah, no wonder I was able to get that for a pretty cheap price, mm-hmm. considering I traded in my PS4 to get the 4 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that was it. Yeah. Huh. All right. Yeah.
So low times and graphical touch-ups?
Yeah, for the 4 Pro, yeah.
4 Pro, okay.
Yeah. The 5 Pro, I don't necessarily... The 5 Pro, what we discussed was that currently right now on the PlayStation 5, and currently right now on some of the Xbox titles as well, you have choices where when you play the game, you can go with performance, which means graphics are going to be toned down a bit because you want the frame rate to be at 60 frames per second. You want mm-hmm. smooth gaming to go through, you know, that. So they'll tone down the graphics a bit so you can play in performance mode. Quality mode means you're going to tone down the FPS to like 30 frames per second in a lock, but you're going to have the best, you know, the better looking of the game. Mm-hmm. When reality, sure, there's a difference, but it's very minimal in the look and the frames per second, to be honest with you, depending on what you're playing. So you can go either way. And a lot of times I would go with quality when I was playing those mm-hmm. more than I would performance, depending on what I was playing. What they're trying to do with the PlayStation 5 is eliminate that choice. You will get the high FPS and you will get the good looking visuals. You don't have to choose between quality and performance. It's all mixed in. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the way they're moving in that direction, which, I mean, that'll last forever. How long? Because once the PlayStation 6 or once the next Xbox comes out, the games will be like, okay, we're pushing these to this limit, and you can either have your, you know, they'll have something where it's like that, but you can also have it looking better. Because mm-hmm. that is the only, that's just the steps it'll make. But the steps are really kind of incremental at this point. They're not leaps. They're steps.
Yeah.
You know, for what we're seeing. So, yeah, there's that too. Thar says you also need a VVR, HDMI 2.1, HDTV to fully get the advantages of the Pro, the VR. Yeah, the variable refresh rate for the HDMI, which is offered in HDMI 2.1. Make sure the TVs you have is HDMI 2.1. Mine does not. It is a nice looking OLED screen, but it does not have HDMI 2.1 in it.
That's the thing about these about consoles. Now you got to make sure all your equipment is
you do
up to date. Now
you absolutely do. All right, we're going to take a break. We did not jump into any news.
we plan to though.
But I promise you, when we come back, we will go down the list and talk about it. We will. I don't know. There's like I said, the PS5 Pro is a big one. Okay, we got some stuff there to talk about, some bigger news that has come up, so we'll get into it. Right now we're going back to the Super Nintendo days. It is the title theme for a game called Out of This World. We'll be back with more of In-Game Chat right after this. Back into In-Game Chat. Here is music from the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. It is Jetsons the Video Game. Welcome back in. We are going to hit the news here, even though we've been talking about old consoles and stuff. I say old consoles. We've been looking at prices of older consoles, prices of the consoles we have now, and that sort of thing, just to sort of compare from the way it was way back when to the way it is now, obviously. So, what did we have? PlayStation 6 is being talked about. Apparently, they're going with their AMD chip, and mainly because backward compatibility is the reason. They've sort of locked themselves into an architecture with their chipset in order to be backwards compatible, and they're going to be stuck with that if they want to remain backwards compatible. They want to remain with backwards compatibility, I suppose. I'm sure there's a way to do it, but yeah, emulation is key in that regard. What else do we have? Let's see. Electronic Arts confirmed a Sims movie is in the works, but that there is not a Sims 5 in the works. In fact, there is no Sims 5 or any Sims sequel planned. All they're going to continue to do is content update for Sims 4 over and over and over again and just do content update. Mainly because, and I think what I read was to start fresh again, they feel like people have put so much time and money into Sims 4 with all the expansions and everything they've been doing that trying to make a Sims 5 and either have all of that stuff be able to be carried over is just too challenging or too just something that, you know, that's an expense they don't want to go. Or the fact that they didn't think that people would follow into that. In other words, we make a Sims 5 that can't bring all of that stuff over. Nobody's going to want to play it. They've spent too much time in Sims 4 with their characters and their profile and everything else that they don't want to move to Sims 5. I don't know if that was just some type of study survey type thing or what it was, but I believe that's what they decided on, was that there's just not going to be an audience for it, given the legacy that is The Sims 4, mm-hmm. which has been out for years, a long, long time. So, not going to get a Sims 5. We already talked about the fact that we had Horizon Zero Dawn Remastered was rated for PS5 and PC. We currently wonder why, but hopefully we'll get some sort of information at some point saying, hey, it's getting remastered. Here you go. Let's talk about it. That sort of thing. I don't know if there's anything coming up gaming-wise as far as reveals and shows and things. The only thing I can think of is down in December for the Video Game Awards. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, the next one, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we got anything else coming up. We might, but I don't know. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Mm. No.
We're getting a Red Dead Redemption PC remaster. Tokyo Game Show. See, I was thinking about it. Thar 6 says Tokyo Game Show. I was thinking about that, but I thought maybe that had already happened. I thought Tokyo Game Show happened in either August or September, but maybe it is happening in October. They will be at the Tokyo Game Show, but I don't know if we'll see anything from the Tokyo Game Show. We might. September 26th, Thar, is that right? Because that's coming up pretty soon. Anyway, Rockstar leaked some more clues about Red Dead Redemption getting a PC remaster. The first one, not the second one. It got a Steam app number, which is not much information. You can view and track the game via SteamDB now. It's not going to show any real info until the store page is actually live, but that hasn't happened yet. It counts as another step towards this game finally being on PC. However, we saw a description for the PC version appear briefly on the PlayStation Store. And earlier this year, a fan of the studio who monitors the back end of Rockstar's launcher found similar game descriptions buried amid the metadata of that launcher. And then, of course, that same practice is where we got the Steam app number, which gives you an idea that, yeah, it's going to get a store page on Steam, but we don't have anything yet. I would imagine this would be maybe a holiday type thing. Could be something prior to the release of GTA 6. So, who knows? Mm. I've got Red Dead Redemption 2 on PC. I don't have Red Dead 1 on PC. Would I pick it up on PC? Absolutely. Absolutely. Thar 6 confirms that, September 26th is the Tokyo Game Show. Mm. So, that is not this week. What week is it? Let's look. That's the calculator, not the calendar, moron. That's Friday, or Thursday. Is this Thursday. Yeah.
It's coming Thursday, yeah.
That is when we're getting the Tokyo Game Show. So maybe we'll get something out of that for next week.
Possibly.
We'll have to see. We got some new SNES games that arrived on the Nintendo Switch. So if you are a subscriber of the Nintendo Switch Online, you got Battletoads Double Dragon. You got a name I'm not even going to try and pronounce. Kunio Kun no Dodgeball de Yozin Inshugo.
I appreciate the attempt.
All I saw was Dodgeball. Yeah. So, yeah.
You said Kunio.
Kunio Kun.
I'm thinking that might be River City Ransom's
they do look like, yeah, game. Yeah. They do have that, that deformed style.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do have that style there. So maybe that's what it is. We got Big Run, whatever that is, and Cosmo Gang the Puzzle, which was a Namco title. Looks like Jaleco was the Big Run title. There was Battletoads and Double Dragon, and then I can't read the publisher name of that other one, though. So, but yeah, that's what you're getting on the SNES side of things. What else do we get? Yeah, okay. PAL World is finally getting sued by Nintendo. We kind of thought this was going to happen way back when it released.
Mm-hmm. Probably spent all this time gathering information and stuff like that. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't remember when the game released, but yeah. This is a statement from Pocket Pair, which is the developer of PAL World, which seems very Pokemon-esque. Mm-hmm. Which, upon seeing it, we're like, wow, how are they not getting sued for this? It looks like a complete ripoff, but...
January of 2024.
Yeah, it seemed like everything was just skewed enough that you could say, no, that's different. It's not the same. That's different. That or Nintendo looked at it and said, nah, not a problem. But apparently they looked closer and said, there is a problem. This was a statement from Pocket Pair. They said, yesterday a lawsuit was filed against our company for patent infringement. We have received notice of this lawsuit and will begin the appropriate legal proceedings and investigations into the claims of patent infringement. At this moment, though, we're unaware of the specific patents we are accused of infringing upon, and we have not been notified of such details. We're a small indie-based company a small indie game company based in Tokyo. It is truly unfortunate they will be forced to allocate significant time to matters unrelated to game development due to this lawsuit. However, we will do our utmost for fans to ensure the indie game developers are not hindered or discouraged from pursuing their creative ideas. We apologize to our fans and supporters for any worry or discomfort this news has caused. As always, thank you for your continued support of PAL World and Pocket Pair. It's actually, it's not about the look-alike. It is the ball mechanic of trapping the creatures, kind of like a Pokeball, does that to trap the creature type thing. And apparently, that's the issue that they have. Which I feel like you just find a new way to do that, change it.
Make it a cube.
Yeah, anything, right?
I mean, I'm not saying that to joke. I mean, to make it different enough, okay?
Yeah.
Make it a device. Make it look like a, that might be another one. Make it look like the... trap and ghost trap and Ghostbusters or something, some device or whatever.
Yeah, and there's no, at this point, there wasn't anything in here to see, like, what's going on now or if they're going to try and change that or make that work. I haven't really read up on that. I don't have PAL World.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've never played it. I was sort of interested when it came out because it was a huge thing that a lot of people were, like, into.
Yeah.
And I thought, might jump into that, but I never did.
Yeah.
I never listened to the zeitgeist. I never jumped in on it when it was out. And so, I was fine with that. I was okay, missing out on that. And apparently I'm okay with it now, too.
Yeah.
So, I know a lot of people have bought it, and I'm sure there's an easy way around this if all they're doing is they just have to tweak the way that you capture or release the pals or whatever they call them in PAL World, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it works. They don't play it. So, yeah. What else do we have? Oh, yeah. Netflix Geek Week took place. I saw some stuff popping up on my YouTube feed the other day. And was like, what is this? What is this? Because I saw a trailer for Devil May Cry, the anime.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there was a trailer for the anime for Tomb Raider, The Legend of Lara Croft. Does it say when that is? October the 10th is when that releases. Splinter Cell, animated.
So it's the same situation as...
Keeping, you see this?
Sims.
Yeah, where's, you see this?
Don't flick birds.
I know, I'm trying to show that I'm crossing my fingers, and I'm not exactly sure how that looks, but anyway.
So it's the same situation as Sims?
Yeah. We're doing everything, but not making a game.
Yeah, we're making a movie.
We're going to make a movie, we're going to make a TV show. Yeah. You want to read some books? We'll throw those books out there for you. Do you want to play a game? Nah. We may make a game based on this cartoon. But nah, or we'll do a mobile game or some VR game or whatever. I mean, if you've read any of my show posts, at the very end, I always talk about how many days it's been since Ubisoft has released a Splinter Cell game. I disclude, in fact, I word it in such a way where it is not a guest spot in a game like he's done, a VR demo, which they haven't done, but I figure it's on the list, doing everything except an actual full-fledged game. An animated project, a film project, you know, just a mainline game.
Yeah.
I think I added remake in there, too, because I think they are working on a remake, which is likely, this thing is set to be, oh, we didn't get a release date, just says coming soon. But this is likely to either tie in with that release, maybe, for the remaster.
Yeah.
Or my other hope is that the remaster they're working on and this animated series, if it does well, and I hope it does, will lead to them continuing the series. Mm-hmm. You know, throwing in another one. So.
How long has Splinter Cell been out of the spotlight?
Let me tell you. Well, again, they have released him, and he's made guest appearances in, like, Ghost Recon Wildlands or whatever it was. Yeah. And I think, like, some kind of fighter thing or whatever he's shown up in. But I can tell you right now, because all I have to do is go to my show post from...
Because I'm thinking they're going to release this thing, and folks are going to be like, who? Or because they're trying to probably ship it to main audiences or whatever.
As of last Sunday... It has been 4,026 days since they have released a Splinter Cell game. 2013? If you go to Splinter Cell Blacklist?
Yeah.
That was, because that's how I came up with the number, was I looked at the release date of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, release date of that was August 20th, 2013. And so I just keep, you know, I go from there and I count how many days it's been.
Yeah.
So.
You see, I ask because, you know, fans of the show, of course, will have interest in it, but they're trying to get the fans and the casual viewer to get into it. So I'm like, is it enough to be called a success? Will there be enough people to.
I don't know what they'll consider as a success, right? I don't know. I don't know. I hope it does well. I don't necessarily want them to Far Cry the thing, you know, where it's like, hey, let's every year, boom, another one, boom, boom. I don't want them to do that. I don't want them to Assassin's Creed it. I just want a Splinter Cell. And if it works, then, you know, give me another one down the line. Don't wait. What are we, 11 years now? Yeah, don't wait another 11 years before, you know, doing another game. Mm-hmm. Just give me the game. So, anyway. We'll wait and see how that goes. What else do we get? Castlevania Nocturne Season 2. We got a release date on that. I thought we did. January 2025. I don't know if I watched the Season 1 of Castlevania. I loved Castlevania series, and then they did Castlevania Nocturne.
I don't remember
if I did that or not. The Witcher with their new animated film or animated series. Did that get a date? Yes. February 11th of next year for The Witcher. Monument Valley 3 is coming to Netflix Games this December, which I enjoyed Monument Valley. So, again, if you've got a Netflix subscription, you're getting some really good free games on that. We got Devil May Cry coming out in April of next year, the anime series for that. Magic the Gathering series. We got some news on that. It was announced back in 2019. They just talked about the showrunner, but there really wasn't much else to know about that either. There was a game based on the Rebel Moon films, parts 1 and 2, called Bloodline, a Rebel Moon game. Heard it was actually not too bad. The films, the quality of the films notwithstanding, the game, not bad. And that's what we got from the Netflix stuff. So we got some more stuff to talk about here, and we're going to get to it whenever we come back here from this break. Apparently, the new Dragon Age game, Veilguard, while I was putting it on my ignore list, after seeing some of it, watching some gameplay and everything else, I was just like, nah, it's not clicking for me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's not clicking for other people. There wasn't much. But then apparently there was a preview. And at least the media is really loving it. They're giving it... They're yeah. It's... well, we'll talk about it when we come back. We'll talk about what it's doing to in the previews and how well it's going there and talk about that. Because it was not on my list, but given what they're telling me and the way that they're comparing it to other BioWare games, this I may be in on this. I may be in on this. We'll see. We got music here from the Sega Genesis days. I gave you Jetsons before. Let's have the Flintstones here from the Sega Genesis. It's just called Let's Rock. We'll be back with more of In-Game Chat right after this. Back in to In-Game Chat. Music here from Vigilante 8 on the PlayStation. Well, on the PlayStation, PSX.
Track. The bus with the Gatling gun on the roof. That one, yeah. School bus. No, not the Greyhound.
Yeah, no.
The school bus with the Gatling guns on the top, yeah.
Track is called Convoy, if anybody's curious. So in the middle of the break, I realized that while I kept saying Rad Racer was probably the first racing game that I ever played, I realized that it goes back to 1985, maybe 86, because I don't know when my dad had this, but it was definitely my father's. My first gaming experience wasn't in arcades, although I'm sure I was taken to an arcade and shown some things that I don't even remember. But I remember we had a Commodore 64 in the house. And I played... The only game I can remember playing most on that was Popeye. But there was also a submarine game. Because I saw the controllers looking it up. And you would turn the... The controller was basically just a wheel. And you just
twist it. Yeah.
Yeah, you twisted it. And your little sub on the bottom would go, you know, left to right, and then you press a button to fire at stuff above you in the water. That's it. That was how you played it. So
I think the only game I ever played with that control was Arkanoid.
Yeah, there was that too, but I didn't play that. We only had the submarine game, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. Regardless, my father had I've found it here. I've been calling it a cassette player, but it was called a data set. Commodore 1530 data set. And it looks like a cassette that you would put into this thing and hit play on, and it would do whatever. And there was a game called Richard Petty's Talladega. And I remember we rarely broke it out because of all the stuff you had to do to get it to run, because it had to have the cassette tape and everything else. But I'm looking at the cover art for this thing, and God, I remember this. Ugh. By the way, the cover art's horrible for this game compared to what we get now. I mean, it's just somebody who drew pictures of cars, and they're not even like there's a VW Bug, I guess, racing at Talladega or whatever. I'm not sure. The numbers sit on top of the cars like taxi cab signs. You know what I'm saying? Just there's no representation of the boy. They really outsourced this to somebody who doesn't know what that is. They're just like, hey, it's a racer. All right, I'll draw some cars in a racetrack.
I wonder if we're looking at the same cover. I'm looking up the cover as well. Like, wow,
there's a yellow car.
It's a yellow car with a pizza delivery sign looking thing on.
Yeah,
top
exactly.
Number 51.
Yeah, and then there's number 3, which looks like a VW Bug.
Yeah, there are no NASCARs.
There's no stock cars
on this thing.
No. But yeah, I remember playing that at home. So that is likely my first racing game that I ever played. Although it mentions Silent Service was the, by the way, the sub game was Silent Service. You're exactly right, Bama Brian. Looking at it further, it mentions Pole Position and Pit Stop. Looking at Pit Stop, I don't remember Pit Stop at all. But Pole Position, I legit remember that. But Pole Position was massively famous.
Yeah.
There was even a Saturday morning cartoon called Pole Position based on the game. Mm-hmm. It's likely I may have played that first because that came out in 82. And I may have played that in an arcade or at somebody else's house or something like that.
Yeah.
My first racing game was Richard Petty's Talladega. I'll just stick with that for now because I have no idea what else it could be. All right, jumping back into the news. We got a very brief blurb on Kingdom Hearts 4. Said the game works as a jumping on point for new players following the events of Kingdom Hearts 3, but will also shift the overall series narrative towards its end, mainly so that the creator can retire. He's Danny Glover, and he's getting too old for this. And so he wants to kind of move it in a direction that is going to end the series. He was thinking about Kingdom Hearts 4 while he was working on Kingdom Hearts 3. Excuse me, my nose is all... I'm getting all cloggy. Oh, we did get this. We did get a trailer for Kingdom Hearts 4. And it looked amazing. It was a teaser. I remember that. It looked really... once you got out into the real world, like the cityscape, it looked really good.
Hmm.
And there was some kind of big black bulbous thing that was flying through the city and... I don't know. It was a strange thing. So, but yeah, I forgot that that was shown off. But yeah, they're looking for that to kind of move it towards the series story towards its end, which I don't know how you wrap that up given the massive amounts of Kingdom Hearts stuff that's out there and trying to follow that story. Mm-hmm. It's very Resident Evil-esque in the sense of where do you start? Where does it go? Why is it screwed up in the middle? Where does this fall in? Because the titles for these things were confusing enough. If you think the titles for this are confusing, the story itself, I think, is probably massively hard to follow, given all the different versions that they've released and all the different sidesteps that they've done, all the different non-mainline story stuff. But, you know, it's one of those things. If you want to absorb it all, you got to go through a lot.
Yeah.
Likely something that I'll never do. So, Dragon Age. Let's talk about Dragon Age. The Veilguard. I'm going to read you the headlines to give you an idea of why I feel the way that I do. This one comes from PC Gamer. Headline says, "Playing 6 hours of Dragon Age The Veilguard gave me the faith its trailers could not. This is the BioWare comeback fans want." I like that because I felt like the trailers weren't pulling me in either.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing is the same thing you have with a lot of releases is trailers with no gameplay.
No, I've seen gameplay of this.
Okay.
I've seen trailers, and we did get trailer without gameplay, but then, like, we got a 10 or 15-minute dev commentary walkthrough of the first section of stuff in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched all of it.
Okay.
But it still wasn't, I was still like, meh.
Still wasn't enough.
Yeah, it's not doing it. It wasn't doing it for me.
All right.
But this says Dragon Age The Veilguard won me over with its combat and polish, even if the story won't stop holding my hand. So, I don't know. That was the subline of the headline there. This is Eurogamer. After playing it all day, Dragon Age The Veilguard feels like the series Mass Effect 2 moment. That's a big claim for me because Mass Effect 1 did not work for me, but Mass Effect 2 absolutely did. I was a little reluctant to get into Mass Effect 2, but when I did, after watching trailers and them talking about how they're going to or how they're changing up the combat and everything else, the way the game plays. Mm-hmm. I was like, sure, I'll give it a shot. And I played, out of all the Mass Effects, 1, 2, and 3, I played more of 2 than any of the others. Mm-hmm. I never finished it, but I got a good ways through it than I did the other stuff. So I was, them putting headlines up like this are like, okay, you're bringing the attention back. You know, let me get a little bit more look at this to see what you're talking about. But I guess it comes when you play it more than it does when you watch it. Because that seems to be the case. People weren't hopeful about this. People were thinking, I don't like the way, what they're doing with it. I'm not sure how it's going to work. But apparently it's working. So, yeah. Let's see. Dragon Age the Veilguard is going to be called BioWare's comeback. It isn't built on the multiplayer trend chasing the Plague Anthem, or the Plagued Anthem. And from the 6 hours I got to play during a hands-on preview event this month, Veilguard didn't seem to be the buggy mess that Mass Effect Andromeda was either. It has all sorts of features that prove BioWare was listening to its players. And critically, it's BioWare doing what it's meant to be best at. Gorgeous, intense, intimate RPGs. All the marketing for the Veilguard so far has been polarizing. My fellow Dragon Age nerds at PC Gamer have been going back and forth on whether each new video heralds doom or redemption for the series. Prior to playing it, I was trending towards the disillusion side. Now, in spite of all the choices BioWare's made that I do still disagree with, the double down on action combat, the shiny and poreless character designs, the cartoonish darkspawn, I believe the Veilguard is going to be a great return to the world I've loved for 15 years. As is only right, I got to start in character creation, which is hands down the most detailed character creator BioWare's ever done. We've all seen and gushed over the silly hairstyles, another massive improvement for the series, but there are wild details, like faction development casual outfits and asymmetrical ear editing too. That's a lot. Regardless of my opinions on the overall visual style, there's no arguing, it's gorgeous. Unlike the reveal trailer that it inspired, playing through this scene of the opening of the game immediately put a smile on my face when I realized Veilguard was winking into the camera. Here we are kicking off a Dragon Age game with an interrogation again, but finally, I'm the one demanding answers, not other people demanding it from me. So yeah, this is a long little article here that goes into the 6 hours of gameplay that they had. See if I can give you the wrap-up on this. At the end of the play session, BioWare told us that everything we played was from just Act 1 of the game. I'd been spirited through recruitment missions and boss fights and several genuinely gorgeous missions that didn't allow me to miss Dragon Age Inquisition's open-world design at all. It made a believer out of me with its combat and reassured me that the quieter moments with my party members between all the action would be worth waiting for. I'll continue to nitpick, and some bits I'm just never going to come around on, but that comes with the fan territory. From what I've seen so far, there's a good chance the Veilguard will do the series proud. So things like that are giving me hope for the game.
Day one purchase for you?
No. You know, I talked about that last week, too, about the reason that I'm not jumping on, like, Space Marine 2 and Astrobot and just... Especially in the world of PC gaming, and I guess more so in console gaming as well, I know that I can get it cheaper than launch price. Mm-hmm. Whether it be a launch price sale that's just 10% off, you're getting it cheaper the week it releases than you would be afterwards. But I also know that I can get this later at a reduced price. You know, why pay the full price when I can get it later? And I understand, like, well, you want to play it now. And with Destiny, I would. But I don't have a game that's pulling me in like that. Astrobot is completely single player. Space Marine 2 has co-op. And I don't mind that, but I also won't mind playing it by myself. But I've also got Josh, who's in the chat room with us. He's like, hey, I'm willing to go through this again whenever you get the game. We'll totally do co-op. I'll totally do that with him. That's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. But it just, it's not one of those things that I feel like I got to jump on right now. Not just that game, but any of those. Especially, and I'll say this now, especially given the fact that we're in late September. Black Friday's rolling around. I know I can pick Astrobot up around then for a cheaper price than what it is now. Space Marine 2 might get a small discount by then. Who knows? There'll be other games on sale. They'll be cheaper in price. And, you know, I can look at doing it then than having to do it right now. Hmm. So, I don't know. It's just the way I look at things where it's like, I don't feel like you're not getting your money's worth when you're buying them at full price. It's just like, why pay full price when you wait a while and pick it up cheaper? Hmm. For me, that's where my thinking comes in. Hmm. So, will it be a day one? Nah. Will I eventually own it and play it? You know, we'll see what reviews say when they release to see if this really holds true outside of the first 6 hours. Mm-hmm. Reading
just something to keep your eye on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reading through Eurogamer's, the PC Gamer is what we read earlier. This is Eurogamer. There's a BioWare game I keep coming back to when I think about the several hours I spent playing the Veil Guard and interviewing BioWare about it. And it's probably not the game you're expecting me to say. It's not Dragon Age Inquisition. It's not Dragon Age Origins. It's not Dragon Age 2, as if I'd have the stones to say that. It's a game from another series the studio is probably better known for, and it's arguably the studio's best, Mass Effect 2. Just as Mass Effect 2 streamlined the elbowy role-playing of Mass Effect 1, honing it into a pacier cinematic action game, so does Veil Guard do this for Dragon Age. There are no pretensions at being an open-world game as it was in Inquisition anymore. The Veil Guard is narrower, which I may have said that right, mission-based game, a phrase I hear a few times over the course of the day, and because of it, the pace never sags. Whatever you do, there's a feeling of purpose and shape. Missions crescendo to a spectacular boss fight. The combat encounters that lead to them feel considered and satisfying. Traversal sections are varied with puzzles and zip wires and slides and balance beams. There's never any dead time. Always there is momentum. And at its best, it's a breathlessly exciting ride. High praise.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at me like, so what's the catch? I don't know. Mm. I'm going to the end of the article here. I've only played one act of a three-act game, though, so there's a lot more I haven't seen. And what I have seen was condensed into action-packed missions and sequences, with the exception of the slightly more open-ended Crossroads area, which you'll return to time and time again. I didn't see much in the way of downtime because there wasn't time for it, so I haven't seen the quieter moments of the game. Regardless, I'm elated to see BioWare in this kind of form again. As a cinematic action game, the Veil Guard roars with quality, and as a role-playing game, it provides a welcome refreshment to the density of Baldur's Gate 3, which it will no doubt be compared against, though perhaps it would be better considered a compliment to. Based on what I played, I've absolutely no doubt the Veil Guard will be an enjoyable ride. My only concern is how much of a memorable one it will be. These are all really great praises for Veil Guard, a game I'd really already kind of said nah, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Good job, but I'm glad you're still there with it, but nah. Mm-hmm. However, this is the more they're throwing in that Mass Effect 2 thing, the more it gets my attention, because Mass Effect 2 I really enjoyed a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm so sorry that I'm all clogged up here. I really do apologize about that as I'm going through this. And so, what do we got? 10 more minutes of me sounding like this. And then you don't have to worry about it. Last week, Bloomberg reported that 25 people comprising the entire staff of Annapurna Interactive walked out the door in a group resignation. Some of the circumstances around the departure emerged in the reporting, but one pressing question was left unanswered, which was why. This article comes from IGN. Having spoken to multiple individuals close to the situation who requested anonymity due to fear of reprisal, as well as an Annapurna spokesperson, IGN has pieced together a somewhat complex answer. Disagreements over the direction of the interactive division, chaotic departures, communication breakdown, and perceived lack of leadership transparency at Annapurna Interactive led to a staff walkout that has left 25 people jobless. It's also left Annapurna leaders scrambling and numerous developers concerned about their contracts with the publisher. Annapurna Interactive. they're one of those studios that you always seem to be getting something creative and unique from them. They seemed like a studio that took chances on what they were going to throw money at and develop and publish.
Yeah.
And when something unique. Yeah, and when they did, you knew you were getting something a lot like the films that they would work with or that they would produce. You were getting something that was either going to be heavily story driven or was going to be uniquely mechanic based. And I'm trying to think of the main one where
these are the folks that made Stray.
They did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're getting something special and unique from them.
That's me, which is something that the video game industry has been lacking.
Exactly.
In for a very long time. Originality.
Something that stands out. Yeah.
I mean, you call it the cat game. Stray.
Stray.
But yeah. That was Annapurna.
I'm trying to think. There's another game. God, it starts with an M. It was a perspective game. So you could take something that was a small size, and if you put it in a perspective to where it was large on the screen, it would be large inside the game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of Superliminal. If you know the game I'm talking about there.
Yeah. I pulled up some of the games here.
Starts with an M. I thought it started with
Mundown?
M. No.
No?
Okay.
Oh, I remember 12 Minutes. They made that game, 12 Minutes. That was another one.
That was another one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
No, I don't see it, but...
I've got to find it here.
That was when we talk about Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. That was another.
Oh, that's another one from them.
Yeah.
Oh man, I've really got to look at that then.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong.
One of the games you were looking at, Cocoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one.
Cocoon's great. Donut County is great. Goragoa was interesting. Mm-hmm. What Remains of Edith Finch?
Mm-hmm.
Stray. We referenced that. Journey.
Is it Maquette?
Yes.
Yeah.
Maquette. That's the one.
Yeah.
Maquette was exactly the one.
Yeah.
Unfinished Swan was great. Lorelei and the Laser Eyes I need to look at. That's one I haven't picked up. Sayonara Wild Hearts. The Pathless.
Oh, did they do the FMV type games too? Telling Lies. I've seen that on the PlayStation Store a few times.
I think,
one of the movie type things, yeah.
But you're absolutely right about, it was Maquette was the one where it's... not perfection, but perspective. It was great about that.
Yeah.
Guys, some really good stuff. Oh, Kentucky Route Zero. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Telling Lies is in there. Ashen. Gone Home, another great one of theirs. Flower, which I think is something they bought because I don't remember ever seeing Annapurna Interactive showing up on my PlayStation 3 when I played Flower from that game company. Which was their name, so I'm not sure about that. Anyway, got a few more minutes here, and I'm just trying to breathe. what's upcoming for you? Anything that you're looking at playing this week or that you're going to try and get to this week?
Well, I was looking at the remake of Lollipop Chainsaw Repop. I was looking into that.
Yes.
I saw that came out. And I was thinking about...
It released already?
Steam. I think Steam had some folks on Steam playing it. So I was thinking about looking into that. I'm still looking into The Operator on Steam. I still remember playing the demo of that. I haven't gotten the full game yet. And I remember last time I was on the show, we talked about that game was released in its full...
I haven't either, and it's not as expensive as I thought it was. It's like 26 or 15 or something like that.
It's somewhere in the teens, I think.
Yeah, I think it is. It's also not a long game from what I understand, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so looking into that again. And, of course, getting back into my fighting games. I haven't played enough of those lately, and I need to really start digging into those again.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching top eights and streams and people having a good time playing these things, and then like I need to just get back into that, see if I can compete again.
No, I don't blame you. So, yeah. I mean, it'll be the same for me as I'll be going into Snap, maybe some pinball. I've put in for some new tables for them because they're working on some new tables for the pinball effect stuff. So I put in for some more of that to see if they'll get them to me. I'll do some Burnout. And I'll play some Frostpunk too. I really want to come back with some thoughts on Frostpunk too.
Yeah.
Afterwards, but I've got a whole library of things that I'm really kind of interested in.
Yeah, and we all got that big backlog now.
Yeah. By the way, Frostpunk 2 is on Game Pass if you've got an Xbox. It is on Game Pass and PC Game Pass. Mm-hmm. Star Trucker is another one that I wanted to get into, and that's on Game Pass as well. I was going through Game Pass when I was looking for Burnout Revenge. Mm-hmm. I hadn't been on Game Pass in a while, so going through it, I was like, man, I've got all these games on my wish list on Steam, but I've got them right here on Game Pass. I need to jump in and play them. Frostpunk 2 was there, but that was before I got a code. Star Trucker was there, was another one. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of others there that I put on my Steam wish list, but they're popping up on Game Pass, which is great because that gives me a chance to play them before, you know, buying them. And seeing if I like them, although most of them I had demoed already, Star Trekker being one of them. Mm. So anyway, I think we're coming down to the end of the show here. So yeah, we're going to be back next week. We are getting closer and closer to the spooky season. So what do we got? We got one more show next week, and then we're jumping into October with our spooky stuff. Which is basically just the music we're going to play, which is all from spooky video games.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Spooky, horror themes.
I know. It's always fun. It is always fun. So, anyway, you guys take care. Have a great one. I will stream tomorrow. I don't know what I'll stream. I kind of feel embarrassed if I'm going to stream Frostpunk 2 because I don't think I'm that great at it, but maybe I will stream it and get some tips from people watching if they could to know what I'm doing.
It can't possibly go as bad as the first time you went through it.
Maybe. I need to go back and play that because I don't know what I did wrong. I mean, I was getting all these prompts saying, hey, this is bad. Like, I was supposed to build, like, food dumps, but I couldn't build them because I had used up all resources. And I was just like, well, then how do I get more? I don't know. I was just trying to figure things out. People started dying a lot, and it was just bad. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I'm going to leave you here with music from a game called Chuck Rock from the SNES days. It probably had a Genesis release. It's the title track from it. You guys have a fantastic week. Enjoy your weekend and the rest of the week, and we will see you next Saturday.